Welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another endowed episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. On today's podcast, we have an interview with Dominic Massimi and Stuart Oaken from Northwestern University. They will be talking to Chicago critic Tom Williams about the university's American Music Theater Project, where new musicals are developed. Also, Tom Williams will be bringing us two more audio reviews. And of course, as always, Chicago's theater news. So sit back, relax, and get ready to talk some theater. Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, giving you the theater news for the week of July 24th, 2006. Christmas may still not be here for another 5 months, but it's not too early to start planning for the holiday season. That's right, tickets to the Goodman Theater's timeless classic, A Christmas Carol, are now on sale. The Goodman Theater's Christmas Carol is one of the most popular Chicago plays ever, and it celebrates the Yuletide season by infusing the Dickens classic with a bit of the Goodman Theater magic. Artistic director Robert Falls has announced recently that the longtime Chicago director and once longtime Ebenezer Scrooge, William Brown, will once again grace the Goodman stage this upcoming season. However, this time he'll be sitting in the director's chair, as Jonathan Weir will be walking a mile in Ebenezer's shoes this season. For more information, go to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Every day, the Victory Gardens Theater inches closer to opening up at the Biograph Theater. Victory Gardens Theater has been Chicago's number one presenter of new work for more than 30 years, and it will be opening its new Biograph Theater main stage this September. Head on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section to get some detailed information on the countdown to the grand unveiling. There you're going to be able to find out information such as the Victory Gardens at the Taste of Lincoln Avenue, when tickets go on sale for Denmark, the opening show in the new space, what time the unveiling and lighting ceremony will begin for the new marquee, the open house celebration that will be available only to subscribers, and of course other valuable information that you can only find at Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Looking Glass Theater Company will take its acclaimed smash hit, Looking Glass Alice, on a regional tour of major East Coast theaters in 2007. The tour will start off in Princeton, New Jersey, continue on through New York City and Philadelphia. But don't worry, Chicagoans, Looking Glass Alice will be back here in Chicago next June. Artistic director David Callen will be returning to direct the adaptation of the stories by Lewis Carroll. The tour is presented in association with the Actors Gymnasium and reunites much of the original 2005 cast. This is a powerhouse show by a powerhouse company. When it comes around next June, don't miss it. A council of seven Chicagoland theaters will be working in association with playwright Susan Laurie Parks to participate in the year-long production of 365 Days, 365 Plays. Back in November of 2002, the Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Susan Laurie Parks committed to writing a play a day for the next 365 days. That's 1 year in layman's terms. The 365 days of plays will begin on November 13th of this year and run through November 12th of 2007. The events will take place in over 600 theaters ranging from cities such as Chicago, Atlanta, LA, Seattle, San Francisco, Minneapolis, and Washington, D.C. The Lucky Seven Chicagoland theaters are Congo Square Theater, the Goodman Theater, the Hypocrites Theater, the Next Theater Company, Steppenwolf Theater, Uma Productions, and Writers Theater. Congratulations, guys. I think it's going to be quite an interesting year. The Tribune Stage Tickers reporting that Kristen Page, the star of the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, is going to be starring in a new show at the Marriott Theater. That's right, she has been cast in the daytime production of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, now running at the Marriott Theater up in Lincolnshire. So, if you want to see her really strut her stuff, go check out 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee and You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And also don't forget to check out her interview with Theater in Chicago. You can find that at Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Chicago comedy legend Del Close apparently did not, in fact, donate his skull to the Goodman Theater. Del Close died at 64 back in 1999, and legend has it that he had donated his skull to the Goodman Theater for use in their Hamlet productions, on the condition that he receive the credit in the program as Poor Yorick. Well, it's quite an interesting story, and you can find out more about it at Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. It's a really good section of the website. You should really check it out. Well, thank you very much for listening to this episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ears. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here is my review of Corteo. Corteo, Cirque del Sol's latest spectacular entry. Created and directed by Daniel Finzi Pasca, it's at the United Center parking lot in the Grand Big Top Tent. Corteo from Cirque du Sol is an amazing theatrical event. I'm not a fan of circus shows, so I passed several times on seeing Cirque del Sol's earlier shows. Big mistake. These guys sure know how to produce a spectacular performance art event. Since 1984, Cirque del Sol, the Montreal-based company, has produced unique performance art programs that are circus-based and visually stunning. The current show, Corteo, contains 57 artists from 14 countries. These are spectacular shows. Over 7 million people will see a Cirque del Sol show around the world in 2006. Count me in as a fan of this art form. After a 3-year absence from Chicago, Cirque del Sol returns with a completely new show, Corteo, featuring a ramp stage with audiences on either side, and the performers are using their real hair and natural makeup. Formerly, they used to have wild outfits and wear masks or would paint their faces other colors. This is a more naturalistic approach they're using in this show. This surprising show in the round is technologically advanced event, and the state-of-the-art Big Top Tent is air-conditioned and has a 58-foot curtain. The thrilling show pushes the limits of acrobatics as it challenged director Daniel Finzi Pasca to produce a clown-oriented show that is fresh and completely unique. Now, the description that they gave us of what this show is about is real important here. Quote, Corteo, which means cortege in Italian, is a joyous procession, a festive parade imagined by a clown. The show brings together the passion of the actor with grace and power of the acrobat to plunge the audience into a theatrical world of fun, comedy, and spontaneity. Situated in a mysterious space between heaven and earth, the clown pictures his own funeral taking place in a carnival atmosphere, watched over by quietly caring angels. Juxtaposing with the large, with the small, the ridiculous with the tragic, the magic of perfection with charm and imperfection, the show highlights the strength and fragility of the clown, as well as his wisdom and kindness, to illustrate the portion of humanity that is within each of us. The music, by turns lyrical and playful, carries Corteo through a timeless celebration in which illusion teases reality. It's a great quote from the press notes, and it also is an apt description of the show. Artists from Argentina, Armenia, Belarus, Brazil, Bulgaria, Canada, France, Italy, Romania, Russia, Spain, the United Kingdom, USA, and the Ukraine inhabit the show, where dance, contortion, hand balancing, vertical ring on pivoting platform leads the way. This show almost defies description. The show opens with a grand parade of clowns in a funeral procession in honor of the old clown, complete with floating angels, aerialists twirling and spinning, tight wire walkers, and trapeze artists all play homage to the dead clown. We see the old clown see a living puppet, an artist marionette that depicts the dead clown on bouncing beds. Next, aerial acrobats on three giant chandeliers spinning feature the four women high above the stage. This is a show that you'll be looking up throughout most of it. It is amazing. Cry wheels and whistling virtuosos perform on a crystal glass. Next, we see duo straps in a mesmerizing act with terrific agility, balance, and strength. Four jugglers do fast-paced feats of prowess. There's jugglers, and then there's jugglers in this type of show, where the jugglers and acrobatics combine to thrill us. The golf scene was a hoot, as the sound of the bagpipes lead the way. The eight musicians underscore the show with an energetic blend of haunting Eastern European melodies, stirring rhythms, and toe-tapping tunes that created a hypnotic tone to this amazing show. We see the helium dance, where the dead clown and his little clowness that bespells the audience with childlike delight. The cute lady swept above the audiences, who deftly pushed her back onto the stage. A ladder specialist also comes out and thrills us with his deft finesse as he tries to reach the ever-present angels that are hovering above us. We enjoy the pantomime horses, who offer comic relief. The above are simply a sample of the fast-paced, thrilling acrobatic acts that completely engage us throughout. This is world-class entertainment that is family-friendly and slickly presented. This is a visually stunning show that will leave you impressed as you witness many of the finest artists in the world doing their specialties with amazing feats of heart-stomping skill. There are so many near-impossible performances in this intoxicating show. This show will just keep you with awe all the way through it. Wow. That's what everyone was saying. It is great to see tremendous artists who are the best in the world at what they do, fearlessly just doing it and entertaining us. My rating for this show, highly recommended. You only have a couple of weeks to get to the United Center parking lot to see this show. Do not miss it. It's 2 hours and 30 minutes. It is at the United Center parking lot in the Big Top Tent, which is just off Damon and Madison Streets in Chicago. For more information, call 800-678-5440. That's 800-678-5440. And this is Tom Williams thanking you for listening and reminding you once again, go see a show this week, including the circus. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here is my review of Do Black Patent Leather Shoes Really Reflect Up? Do Black Patent Leather Shoes Really Reflect Up? By John R. Powers. Music and lyrics by James Quinn and Alaric Jans. Based on the novel by John Powers, it is at the Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana. Classic Catholic school musical still scores high notes. William Polinsky is a master at directing classic musicals, especially ones that he initiated at his now-defunct Candlelight Forum Theater in the 1980s. Do Black Patent Leather Shoes Really Reflect Up? Ran for 4.5 years there, and it had many remounts over the years in Chicago. The show is a staple with community theaters across America. It was also the first show that the famed producer Livy Adler Mages produced. The show is pure Chicago, pure 1950s Catholic school, and pure heartwarming crowd pleaser. I have not seen this show since I caught it at the Forum in the 1980s. I was surprised at how strong the material is. John Powers' book and James Quinn and Alaric Jens' lyrics and music definitely capture the essence of growing up Catholic, guilt and all. The coming-of-age musical explores the trials and tribulations of being educated by the nuns with the help from those conservative parish priests. From the strong emphasis on the catechism and the selling of fear and eternal damnation, the Catholic schools emphasize discipline and biased religious teaching. Thankfully, Black Patent Leather Shoes takes a warm, nostalgic tone, emphasizing the agony and ecstasy of growing up Catholic. Eddie Ryan, played by the terrific boy next door, fine vocal Ryan Gardner, narrates the memory musical as he returns to St. Bastian's to find his first love, Becky Bakowski, who is played by Meg Miller. We return to those early days with this class featuring Virginia, played by Carrie Kyler, Felix, played by Ed Cross, Mike, played by John Cunningham, Nancy, played by Lauren Ashley Bishop, Mary, played by Dina DiConstanzo, and Louie, played by Jeffrey James Binney. Add terrific turns from the strong voice of Anne McMahon as Sister Helen, and the funny turns from the tremendous veteran actress Iris Lieberman as Sister Lee, and the cute and funny moments from James Harms as Father O'Reilly, and the show is both accurate and cute to the bone. Black Patent Leather Shoes score is a nice blend of Broadway, 50s pop rock with strong ballads that depict the angst, fear, and guilt of growing up. Tunes like The Greatest Gift, Little Fat Girls, Cookie Cutters aptly tell the kid's story in song. The humor's Private Parts, where the kids are told about the taboos of sex, was especially funny. Act 2 finds the 8 separated at Catholic high schools. Part 1 is all about them growing up in the Catholic grade schools. So part 2, they go to the Catholic high school, with the boys going to all boys Catholic high school and the girls going to an all-female. The second act starts out with a doo-wah-wah-doo-wah-wee tune led by Jeffrey James Binney. This is a doo-wop song that was beautifully done and funny, and it was choreographed by Stacy Flasher, who again demonstrates her tremendous talent as a choreographer. This tells you aptly of what a 50s mixer was really all about, where the boys sat on one side and the girls on the other, and eventually the nuns got tired of the boys not asking the girls to dance, so they would grab them by the ear, get them over there, and make them dance. Ryan Gardner nicely lands the "I Must Be in Love" as he falls in love for the first time in his life. The confessional scenes offer a cute take on the Catholic guilt and forgiveness. There's a couple of them. There's the beginning confessional scenes when the kids are in, I don't know, fifth or sixth grade, and then later on when they were in high school when they have to go to Father O'Reilly and tell their sins. The high school years are nostalgically presented and brought back many fond memories for me. We like and care about all the kids, and we appreciate the discipline the nuns taught us. This musical gets us recovering Catholics rethinking those wonderful days, at least the best parts of those days. I'd venture to say that the Publix, the term used for those who didn't have the fortune or misfortune of going to a Catholic school, could also relate to growing up during the conservative, simpler time of the 1950s and early 60s. I can appreciate why this wonderful slick show has endured so long. It has warmth, heart, and honesty. The tunes and the dances are also terrific. What's not to like here? This is a true classic Chicago-style musical with a classic boy meets girl, boy falls in love, boy loses girl, boy wins girl back structure. The realism and comedy are nicely presented without offending anyone. I'm glad I saw this wonderful show after so many years. The production values were terrific. It is a surprisingly strong Broadway-style musical. My rating on this show, recommended. Title again is Do Black Patent Leather Shoes Really Reflect Up? performance by John R. Powers at Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana, which is just a little ride right across the Indiana border in the south suburbs of Chicago in Munster, Indiana. The address is 1040 Ridge Road in Munster. This running time is 2 hours and 15 minutes with intermission. It runs through August 13th at Theater at the Center. For more information, call 219-836-3255. That's 219-836-3255. Thank you for listening. This is Tom Williams reminding you, go see a play this week. This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guests today are from Northwestern University, which is the home of the American Musical Theater Project. Our guests are Dominic Messini, who is the director of musical theater program at Northwestern, and a well-known local Chicago director who has done quite a few shows at Marriott Theater. With him is Stuart Olkin, who is the former executive vice president of the Disney Theatrical Projects, and he's been a local director in Chicago and a filmmaker. He is the artistic director for the American Theater Project. Let me start with you, Dominic. Tell us what the American Musical Theater Project is.
The American Music Theater Project, well, our number one goal with this project is to really help to develop new musical works. That is, I think, a unique thing in the United States in terms of how we do it, and that is that we combine the best professional artists who are writing music theater with the environment of an academic institution, using our students as the performers, using our designers in the productions, and using our scholars and our acting teachers. So it's, an interesting combination of the best of the professional world with the educational world. And then we're also very dedicated to heightening our academics in music theater by providing even more quality opportunities for the students to work with these professionals, and also to get a little more involved in academic research in the area of music theater.
Oh, great.
Lots of goals.
Well, Stuart, you are the artistic director of, right, of the project. Tell us what your role is in this.
My role is predominantly to facilitate the selection of the material, working with Dominic and our executive committee, and to work then very hands-on with the writers, director, creative team in shaping the new material. Because, as they say about musicals, new musicals are not written, they're rewritten. And indeed, the process from when we get involved in a project to when we put it on, there'll probably be several versions of the script, a workshop phase, and that kind of process requires creative leadership that comes some from the director, but it needs a producer also who can kind of put that process in place.
And you have an executive committee. There's,
yes,
some blue ribbon names on it. Tell us who's on
the
executive
Well, our executive committee is actually the people within the university, people, members of the faculty from the Weinberg School, from the Kellogg School, from our own faculty of music theater and the School of Music. So those are the people that are actually facilitating the day-to-day operations. I think you were referring to our advisory committee.
Advisor, I'm sorry.
Which includes Sheldon Harnick, Frank Galati, Mary Zimmerman, Bob Falls, Tina Landau, and Richard Christensen.
You didn't get too many heavyweight pros on that.
Yeah, well, we need all the
Dominic,
help we
I
can
gotta
get.
Ask you, you're the chairman of that committee, right?
Yes, I'm
and
the executive director.
And you're the executive director for the project.
Right.
At what point do you get those big names involved?
Okay. Well, at this point, I mean, for example, last year when we were doing Was, we brought Richard Christensen in even at an early run through to sort of get his thoughts on the play, to get his advice and to help us sort of shape what we were doing. We certainly involve them in terms of exactly what the word says, advisory, talking to Mary Zimmern and those folks to talk about what our plans are. But in many instances, they are there as those heavy hitting names that help to give us a little bit more visibility to the world to say we work with very quality people, because most of those people are associated with Northwestern, and we're very proud of the fact that we can call them part of our family.
Yes, that's true, and so I've always told people that Northwestern is probably the finest musical theater program in the country. I've seen a number of your productions, and I remember Parade, when you did Parade.
Oh, yeah, we were very happy with
that.
Wow,
that was...
It was good. It's nice to know that we have students here at Northwestern who have astonishing talent, but they also have incredible brains, and I think that's what makes us kind of a unique, very liberal arts-based program in music theater, but it also, I think, is what makes this program, AMTP, pretty special, because we really are trying to find ways of redefining what music theater is by looking, you know, down the line of how we can do a new opera. Even some of the people, artists that we have that plan to come and be with us are people who are really cutting edge in the world of opera and in new music theater. And that excites us to think that we can look at School of Music and, you know, and Weinberg and have a lot of different schools involved in with what we're doing.
Stuart, tell us about The Boys Are Coming Home. That's this year's show.
Right. Boys Are Coming Home is loosely based on the Shakespeare comedy Much Ado About Nothing. And the key hook for us in this project was the composer-lyricist Leslie Arden. We first came into contact with Leslie's work in Chicago, actually, when she was here doing The House of Martin Guerre at the Goodman mm-hmm. Theater
in
the mid-90s. And it was a production that really struck us. The quality of writing was very high. Leslie's from Canada. And it's not that they don't grow some good musical theater writers there, but they haven't got the same exposure in our country that American writers have. So we think Leslie's right up there with some of the best talent that's working in our country right now. And the chance to get her new musical and help her develop it along the way was a really terrific opportunity. She wrote this with a playwright named Bernie Stapleton. And we were just thrilled that we were able to attract Gary Griffin.
Yes, that's a major
Purple
coup. Yeah.
Director, and
who I might add, I think got burned at least not getting a nomination.
Sure deserved it, yeah. But you know, it's a the Tony Awards only give director nominations for revivals and new musicals together. So it's a very tough category, yeah. Four nominees with the whole breadth of shows.
And I'll throw a shot at him, especially if you're not a New Yorker.
Well, I guess so. But
that's
anyway,
all right.
We're in rehearsal. We did a workshop in the
Give us the idea of the process now of it's going to open when on the 28th.
The 28th we start performances, right. And our press
the
night
press is the 4th. Yeah,
well, you know, the process is really it takes 3 to 5 years to do a new musical, and we, being a relatively new company, we brought this project in right at the start of AMTP, which is about a year and a half ago, and at that point there was a pretty solid first draft, which was fantastic for us because to start at the very, very beginning would be almost impossible on a timetable.
Yeah,
basis.
I could see that. So it helps to have a good script.
Well, look, the fact is that we may want to start earlier, and hopefully in the future we'll be in a position where we can look at some artists that have a great idea and support them from the inception. Mm-hmm. But starting up AMTP, that was not an option for us. So we were really lucky to find this piece that had many, many things going for it. And when we worked on the first draft with Leslie and Bernie, we were able to kind of get it to a point where we thought it was ready for a director. That's when we brought in Gary.
Okay, tell us how that works. How do you select Dominic, how do you select a director for this?
Well, actually, it's interesting because, first of all, I should say we're very blessed to have Stuart with us because he has one of the most incredible little black books of music theater that you can imagine. So he's got names like Alan Menken and Julie Taymor and all the people that we all
And they'll answer. And when you call, I'll answer the phone.
They answer the phone because they're
that helps.
They're his friends. So interestingly, it's sometimes in this particular instance, yes, we did pick a director. But in many instances, projects that are being evolved have had directors involved with them from their inception.
Okay.
Like with Was, which was our first production, the wonderful Tina Landau had been working with Joe Thalkin and Barry Kleinbort on creating that production. We just came from looking at a new project that Francesca Zamballo is working on with Beth Henley, the playwright, and the composer Rachel Portman. She's been involved from the very beginning. So it's kind of impossible to imagine that we would ever hurt that wonderful combination of creative artist, director, and music, and composer and lyricist.
Is that a new, kind of a new trend now where directors are getting involved at an early point?
I think that writers like having directors involved early.
They would,
the
yes.
Piece then becomes has more unity when it gets to the point where it's ready to go. Mm-hmm. You know, but it doesn't always happen that way. Our show this fall is called Asphalt Beach, and that's written by Andrew Lippin, Peter Spears, and Tom Smith, and that did not have a director when we found it. And we found a director and introduced them to the team, and they hit it off, and that's how it happened. But you pick someone that you think will have the right chemistry for the material, for the personalities. Hopefully you find someone who's a great collaborator, because in our jobs, you never stop working on the piece from the minute you start through the closing of Northwestern. We don't pretend that it's over the development process when we're done. Hopefully we've just taken it to the next level where it can become successful.
Well, I remember some of the past shows, Dominic, that you did, particularly the Frank Galati piece, A Long Gay Book.
Right.
That turned into a marvelous show.
It was great. And, you know, I have to say, that was pretty instrumental in the development of the American Music Theater Project.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Had it not been for Stuart, a good friend of Frank Galati's, attending that production and then going back to Frank and say, oh, my God, there's Stephen Flaherty, Mr. Hot Broadway composer, mm-hmm. with Frank writing the book and directing it. And it was like, and the talent was so great. The design elements were great. He said, gosh, isn't this the perfect kind of place for us to develop a program of creating new musicals? And so the next thing, Stuart is calling me to say, hey, Dominic, what do you think about this idea? And I said, I'm thrilled with the idea, and I need someone to help me make it happen. And then together, Stuart and I kind of went to our dean of the School of Communication, Barbara O'Keefe, and then Barbara got us organized to go up the hill to, you know, the provost, and we presented our case, and very quickly, they came back and said, we love this idea, and we've been in business, and hopefully we're going to be in business for a long time.
Oh, that's great.
That production, I think, inspired us to have AMTP.
Well, and, you know, I wouldn't have come to see it, and I don't think Hattie Weiss would have come to see it if it hadn't had your name on it with us knowing you from all the Marriott productions and the reputation that Northwestern has.
You know, I think that's a great point because, and what Dominic was illustrating there was that I was running around with this idea in my head to start an institute like this at a university, and I'm Chicagoan, so
yes, it's you are. Not you go back to old organic theater.
No,
old
I do, and I didn't come here specifically saying I got to do this idea in Chicago, but it was seeing Long Gay Book and seeing the level of talent that Dominic has developed inside this musical theater program that really inspired me, as you said, to say, gee, we could do this here. And, of course, then the double plus was that it was my hometown, and I have a lot of friends here, and it was easy to kind of fit.
And
right
what a great in. What a great institution. I mean, the facility
amazing.
Here is tremendous.
I wanted to add one other little thing. It's so interesting how things sometimes – amazingly come full circle. I mean, at the time when I was teaching Heather Headley and I was having to say goodbye to her because my good friend Frank Galati calls me to go, "I'm so sorry, Dominic, but I want Heather to come and be the understudy to Audra McDonald in Ragtime." And I go, "Hey, Frank, you know, that's your decision. That's Heather's decision." And so I said goodbye to her, only then to go into Lion King, which Stuart was working on, only then to see her become the star of Aida, which was Stuart's major project that he brought to Broadway.
She was fabulous.
Fabulous. And I just think how interesting that through these friends, through Frank and Stuart, it kind of comes back again. And like we were all doing something that eventually met up again back here in AMTP.
You know, you skipped the part about when I went up to Toronto to steal Heather away from Ragtime so she could come and be in Lion King. And she had the kind of contract where we could buy it out. And Garth Drabinsky was wildly angry at her, at us. How can you leave me? And she did. I said, I don't think this woman's going to hold up under his pressure.
Well, when you got a chance to star in a Disney show, I mean, you got to go for that.
But I have to say, Heather called me once and said, "Dominic, what should I do?" She said, "I could go to Broadway in Ragtime and be Audra's understudy. And even though she's missed a lot of performances and I've gone on for her, there's no guarantee that anyone will ever see me in that show because I'm just third from the right in the ensemble." But she said, "Do I really want to do Lion King? Because I hear this crazy director is going to have us wear all these masks and maybe people won't even know who I am under the mask." And I said, "Don't worry about it. I think you'd be smart to head in the Disney direction because you're going to sing big solos and you're going to really get in the spotlight." And she was wonderful as Nala, and that certainly was the tide that turned to lead her to her big Tony Award winning role.
Yes, I believe that. But it's funny but you guys have the talent pool and the judgment. I mean, you know, some people listening might say, "Well, you know, geez, I wish I could get these guys to know me and maybe I'll do well." But if they're good, you'll find them, right?
Well, you know, and the truth of the matter is it's often foolish of us to think we take credit for them. I mean, great actors come into Northwestern as great actors. Great singers arrive already. Heather arrives already with, "Oh, my God." In her freshman audition, we all looked at each other and said, "This girl's ready for Broadway right now." You just know it. You spot it. Yes, we help along the way. We give a few little vocal technique classes.
I think you do more than that.
Well, we do. But, the natural ability arrives at our doorstep, and then we do what we can to really try to perfect it. But we're very lucky because we have this, you know, student body of exceptional human beings.
Do you go out and recruit? Does the university go out and recruit?
Not at all.
No?
And we have so many people who apply to the university. I mean, it's shocking to think that the number of students who don't get into Northwestern, and mainly we do not audition them either at the moment. We're not like...
Oh, you don't audition?
We do not audition in the theater department. I think the School of Music has vocal auditions for like opera program, but our students are brought to Northwestern because of their grades, not because of an audition they had to say, "I'm a great actor." You know, it's they've been great
students. But I think the word's out too. The kids that really want to be in musical theater know this is one of the places to come.
I hope that's true. I think we've sort of very quickly become one of the places to study and one of the places to be, especially with the arrival of AMTP, when you go, "Oh my gosh, I get to be directed by Tina Landau. Gary Griffin is directing here."
Okay, now, Stuart, tell us a little bit more about The Boys Are Coming. Now, it's what, set at the end of World War II?
Yes, it's a fantastic concept. Yeah. It follows the template of the characters of Much Ado, but it's got nothing to do with the Shakespeare period. Okay. So it's set right at the end of World War II. And really the piece is about the way the world changed at home while the men were gone. And how they come home with expectations that life will return to normal. And what really the message of the show is, and I think this is the part that really is universal, is that we're always navigating together a changing world. And there's uncertainty out there.
And well, that's certainly true today.
We have to live with that uncertainty and grow with that uncertainty. And the men and the women of this show both realize that it's a new ballgame at the end of World
Musically, War II. What style? Is it swing music?
Yes, it has, 40s kind? You know, Leslie is a real, she's a real artist. So she's got her own voice. And ultimately, this is a Leslie Arden score, probably as influenced as much as anything from, you know, the best Sondheim-esque musical theater of our time. But the influences on the score are bebop and swing and music of that period.
So that is, I just love that era. Yeah, that is such great music. So there's a little bit of even Cole Porter, Gershwin.
Yeah, there is. There's some of that. Yeah. You know, it's funny. The show is pretty classic in the way it's formed. When I first started working on it, I realized that it really felt like a Cole Porter show, but not a show that could have been written until now. So isn't that an interesting way to think of it? It's structured and feels something familiar, but they didn't write in this kind of depth at that time.
Well, I was going to say, the books almost didn't exist.
That's right.
And this has a strong book.
Very strong. Very strong.
Well, that's great. What's the plan? Now, this show is... Do you call it a world premiere, or is it?
This one is a world premiere.
Okay,
had a couple of productions before, and we don't feel like we have to do the very first production. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to be able to do a show where the authors, the director, the creative vision has not fully been realized, and we think there's somewhere to help the artists grow to.
And Dominic, did you help in the casting? How did?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think we're all in the room, okay. And this one has some of our best young female performers on stage, where we had a big casting session, and it does incorporate some guest artists. We have the cast is 23, I think 19 of them. What is it, Stuart? About 18 are student performers from the music theater program, but we have a couple of guest artists. You know, we try when in fact it's a father that has to be played, that we'd like to have a real father. So we have a couple of men in their 40s and 50s who are playing
the roles.
You did
that with Longgate Book.
That's exactly too, right. And we're having Cindy Gold playing
Cindy
Gertrude
Gold
Stein. And we have a recent graduate playing the young romantic lead, and one other Equity actor. So it's a wonderful combination again. I think when the audience comes to see the show, you know, to say Much Ado or to think swing era, they're going to get socked with some really good messages in the show.
It's a very strong book.
It's a very strong book with some issues in it that makes you go, wow, this is really meaty. This is not just a little flyaway.
Well, that's refreshing to hear because, as you know, the biggest complaint on musicals is the book.
Sure.
And I think the book causes more of the fail than anything. But now, musically, what kind of dance do we see? You have a lot of big dance numbers?
Well, I mean, it's not tons, but certainly we're in a canteen scene, and there's some jitterbugging and real bebop going on. And so that's very lively. And, you know, though we're in the Barber Theater, it's not like the Kahn Auditorium. It's a 450-seat theater, which is a wonderful space for these new works. I think we have 11 or 12-piece band, so it's going to be a nice big sound. So I think we're really going to rock the house and fill it with lots of sound. And we have a wonderful... A guest costume designer, Nan Zabriskie, who's done many shows all over the city. She's done a great wardrobe, a great 40s, and Rosie the Riveter.
Yes.
We have a little bit of everyone. And there's going to be a lot of Army GIs. I think maybe even our band might look like a whole GI band. I don't want to give that away, but it will be a
And it's going
nice
to run... The previews are July 28th, and it's going to run to August 13th.
That's correct.
How many shows a week? Let's chance for a little plug for it, because I think people ought to come up to Northwestern, because this is not a student show.
Yeah.
This is a top professional Equity Broadway musical.
Well, we're not all Equity, but we certainly have the aspirations to be as professional as humanly possible, and I think they'll feel that. And the nice thing is, though, we open on July 28th, we play three performances that first weekend, but what's our whole scheme with AMTP is that the writers are with us. They've been with us since the middle of June. They will then make changes after that Sunday matinee, when they'll get a day off on Monday, but on Tuesday and Wednesday night and during the day, we come back and work on the show again so we can better it for the second
weekend.
That's
terrific.
So the process goes on, and it's not just sort of we're done, we've opened, and now we're going to have a little opening next week. We're working on it.
Okay, Stuart, let me ask you this. All right, now the show runs through the 13th. How many performances are you going to do? 13 performances, okay. At that point, you have the press coming out, so we're going to do reviews of the show, and you're going to get all the feedback from, you know, your committee, audiences, and so forth. What happens then?
You know, this is not a program that's about us taking the shows on entrepreneurially. This is really about the writers.
Okay.
So the thing that comes out of this is that the work gets exposed to
a whole new level of producers that could take it to the next stage.
So you're hoping some producers come.
Yes, but okay, one good thing that we can also tell you already that's very exciting is that this show was selected by the National Alliance for Music Theater to be included in its festival this fall in New York. So
very good. That's already a home. Yeah. I see Dominic smiling already. Great.
Yeah, it's there's eight shows, 130 applied. Mm-hmm. Were submitted and sponsored.
130 applied, and you were one of the eight.
Eight.
That says
selected
a lot.
Yeah. Says a lot about Leslie Arden, Bernie Stapleton, and what they're aspiring to create.
That was based on the workshop that we did back in February. So we sent them a tape of our workshop, all the music and the script. So based on hearing that and reading that, they chose it as one of the
that really, that really speaks
so
volumes.
I think that,
yes,
I think both for the cast who were performing it and for the writers who got it to a point where they said, absolutely, come on board. We want to show this off in New York. And that's wonderful because the National Alliance for Music Theater is made up of professional theater companies. It's sort of the darling of the music theater community. It will be very exciting to get their response to our work.
Yes, that would. Well, because I know I saw the Even Stevens show that you did a couple of years ago, and David Bell's American Vaudeville. I was surprised Marriott hasn't done that.
Well, you know, David tells me just recently that he has gotten a contract, I think, in hand for someone has picked it up as a little national tour. Now, maybe not a little, maybe a big national tour.
Very good.
But he's going to be directing that, and it's going to go on the road. And
so you're
he's
play
very
Chicago?
Excited about that. I don't know, but I think they're just in the formation of that.
Because that was a dynamite show
a
couple years ago.
Very nice job.
One of the better dance shows I've seen.
And I don't know if you know, Tom, but David joins us next year. He is now our newest member of the Northwestern Music Theater faculty.
Boy,
David
are you going to save somebody, some of the other university?
So I think that's absolutely going to help to put us on a map. In addition to, we have this hot, new, cutting-edge director named Amanda Dehnert, who Stuart had hired her before she was even hired at Northwestern. She's directing our fall AMTP show, Asphalt Beach, the new work by Andrew Lippa. So she's also joining the music theater faculty. So in 1 year, I've gone from a faculty of one to a faculty of three. So I'm quite excited to welcome them.
Well, Stuart, where do you find these people? I mean, you're really tapping into your black book.
Well,
huh?
That's sweet. It's not so much that. It's that I had the good fortune to spend 10 years with Disney, where I reconnected with the musical theater community.
That, you were doing films, right?
Yeah, I started in Chicago in the 70s doing theater. Okay. But then I went and spent 10 years in L.A. working in the film business when Disney recruited me to come help them start their division, which is what led to Lion King and Aida and then shows that have come out of Disney. And I left there about 3.5 years ago with an intent of starting a new company of my own that would produce shows on Broadway and helping found some kind of institute where we could work on material without the commercial pressures, and that's what led to the formation of AMTP.
So you were one of the instrumental. And you did you bring it here to Northwestern?
Yes. It was just in my head. Mm-hmm. The thing that was fortuitous was that, as I think we were talking about before, was that I had a big plan. I had it written down on paper. I mean, I had a whole vision of how it would work, but I didn't know where it was going to fit. I knew it needed to be a university because the economics of our business simply required a place that had infrastructure to set something like this up. But when I saw Long Gay Book and met with Dominic and realized the level to which the students were playing the game and how smart the faculty was here, it seemed like such a natural fit. And as Dominic said, this is something he would have wanted to do as a natural outgrowth of his own program. So
you both kind of had the idea.
We both had the idea, and it was just a great fit
together.
You know,
a lot of great things work that way. And I agree with Long Gay Book. If no one had ever been to Northwestern and somehow they saw this and because they like Gertrude Stein, they sort of stumbled on the show and went to see it, they would have been blown away. Mm-hmm. As many productions as I've seen, you do. I just thought it was fabulous.
That's great. Well, you know, and the thing is, I have been involved. I've been at Northwestern since 1980. So I have been involved with the WAMU show.
I love the WAMU show.
We have a great tradition of writing new material with these talented students. And though I'm busy directing musicals and directing WAMU, the thought that I had another soulmate who was going to say, this is what I want to do, and I go, this is what I want to do too, but I can't possibly do it alone, you know, was a great comfort and joy for me that I can actually say, together, let's make this happen. And fortunately, we are making our circle of friends bigger and bigger and winning over more and more people who want us to succeed mightily and to make this
well,
really
you know,
work.
We certainly need these incubators for Broadway musicals. And the irony is you work for Disney, who kind of upped the ante on Broadway with the major productions. I mean, what is it now, 10, 12 million to put on a show?
Well, yeah, I think it could be more than that.
More than
it's, I mean, it probably ranges on Broadway for a musical from as low as 8 to as high as 20 today. It's pretty costly.
And I heard that the show in Toronto was 29 million.
That's true. That was Canadian anyway.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But that was an extravaganza. So, but yes, the fact is that these shows cost more and more to do, and that's why programs like this fill in the gap of development, because if you're going to do a show that's going to potentially cost even $10 million to open on Broadway, the stakes are very high. Yes. So how do young writers, how do new ideas get flushed out so that we can all see if they work before anyone makes a decision about putting $10 million?
And I think it's so good that you're doing it here in Chicago, because I think you guys got to agree, this is where theater's happening. Everybody's saying that now, you know, and it's not just because we're, you know, we love Chicago. You see how many playwrights are moving in here, young actors, little theater groups, little kids out of the schools in different cities. They all come here and start their groups.
You know, they say there's a renaissance in Chicago theater every 5 years. And in some sense, that's true, because Chicago is a place where people put roots in and sometimes move on to other places. But once you make a relationship with Chicago as a performer, a director, a writer, you always have that relationship. So you go and you come back.
And also, there's no big egos in Chicago. I mean, I know you've directed a lot of shows at Marriott. I mean, one time you'll have someone who will be the star, and the next show you got them in the ensemble.
It's the absolute thrill of working in Chicago, and why that it's a particular brand of Chicago theater. And I think it comes from the fact that we have a lot of working class roots with strong work ethics. We love to work. We love to work in the theater. Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite examples is the actress Aline Robertson.
Right.
I mean, you know, one minute she's Mama Rose and the lead in every musical that's going on, and the next minute she's working in the box office at Drury Lane Oakbrook or doing costumes backstage. And she's like, I just want to be around the theater. I'm a theater person. And I think I love her for that. I mean, she's a virtuosic performer, but she sort of represents to me all that's good about people in Chicago who are not spoiled, who just love the art of.
Yeah, I don't know her, but I do know John Rieger and Paula Scarfano, and they're two more examples.
Of our NU alums, too.
Yes, they are.
And I think every time I think of John and Paula, I say, my God, that's the dream couple who put their kids through college. They've spent their life in Chicago, played every role you can play, and own a home. They've had a prosperous life, probably difficult,
I've interviewed them. They've told me it's been tough, but they never once, wanted to go to Hollywood and try and be film people or trying to go to New York.
Roger Mueller and Jill Schellenberg are two others who've raised a family, and now their kids are like the next generation, and that little Abby and some of their kids are going to be the new stars.
Well, you
got
to get somebody to write a show for them.
That's right, the whole family. I'd love to see that.
But I think that speaks a lot about Chicago and why this is the perfect place to have your program, and I think it's some great judgment. So what is in the future now? Your fall show?
Our fall show is called Asphalt Beach.
Okay.
It's written by Andrew Lippa, who wrote what I think is maybe the best score of the last 10 years, which was his Wild Party.
Yes, his Wild Party. I don't know if you saw that. They had a production of it here in Chicago that was terrific.
It was fantastic. Yeah. Really great production. Yeah. And we're thrilled to have his new show here. And so that's in the fall. And Dominic told you we have a new musical that we haven't announced yet, but he did say that Oscar Eustace, the artistic director of the Public Theater, New York Shakespeare Festival, will be directing that show. So
that's a real coup.
You can imagine that we've got some wonderful.
Hey, you bring the New Yorker into Chicago. That's interesting.
So that's kind of where we're at. And we have a few things in the hopper for down the road, but not ready to talk about yet.
Okay. And but you guys are the ones that the committee starts the process of finding the plays, right?
Well,
give us a little bit about how that works.
Yeah. We do. Okay. Dominic and I are the
you remember, this is a new institute. There's not a lot of staff that supports it. We've got the luxury of being absorbed in this theater and interpretation center and the music theater program, so that structure supports us. But for AMTP, it's pretty much my job to go out and find the right material and the right artists and then bring it back and share it with Dominic and the team here, and we then talk to the executive committee, and we see where the fit exist. Remember, most of our performers are still young, so it wouldn't make sense for us to go out and select a piece to produce here that needs 15 older actors to make the piece work, because our goal is for the writers to learn and grow with this piece of material and for our students to have an authentic experience. So if we put them in roles they can't do, we eliminate that. So there is some criteria, you know, it has to really has to work for us. We have to think we can do it well. Mm-hmm. And if we think we can do it well and we can put the right team together.
Well, you've got the facility, you've got the students. And as with Long Gay Book, if you need faculty, you've got some terrific people on your faculty that are some terrific actors, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the show, give us a little plug now for the show. The Boys Are Coming Home.
Opening July 28th, cast of 24, 11-piece orchestra, wonderful production elements. And I think it's a score that everyone is going to love. There's great humor. There's serious themes going on. I think it's and I think, I was watching the other day, I don't think maybe more than one damn or hell in it. So not a lot of swear words. I think it's a show that families would love.
Well, that's good, because I hate shows with, you know, that there's no reason for it. All of a sudden, they have like their quota of dirty words.
And this is not, you know, one. I think it's a really a beautiful show that I think it's something I would love to talk with my 16-year-old daughter about, because I think there's a lot to say. Wow, that was going on in the middle of the 40s. That kind of prejudice, those kinds of thoughts about women having their place in the household, and I mean, I there's a lot of things that are said that I think are provocative, and really you don't expect it to pop up in a musical comedy.
Okay, give us a phone number or how people can get tickets. They can go to the Northwestern University website, right?
Yes, and you can call our box office at 847-491-7282, and that's how you can get tickets to see. And they're
going
fast.
One more time.
847-491-7282. And I might just give one other plug.
Okay, sure.
We're thrilled with our production of The Boys Are Coming Home, but we're doing a whole series of shows.
Yes, let's go over to, I know the
right
Broadway Now and the
right.
R&J Shakespeare.
R&J Shakespeare. And that was part of why we picked that, is this whole summer has been kind of dedicated to Shakespeare in adaptation.
Okay.
So here is a four-character musical in which four prep school boys literally do their interpretation or their reading of Romeo and Juliet. So that's playing in a studio theater for the next couple of weekends. We have in the middle of August, August 14th, a musical review called Broadway Now.
You directed that, right?
I will be directing it with my music theater students. Two of my best girls have put together an incredible review on the history of tap dancing called Tap That. And then for a whole week, August 7 to 12, we have a whole series of evening cabaret shows with Amanda McBroom, John Bacchino, David Zippel. It's a whole week devoted to young songwriters, which is also part of what American Music Theater Project is sponsoring this summer.
Wow, that's great. And they can go on to the Northwestern University website. To what, the theater?
Yes, there's a theater website. Okay. I think it's... there's an AMTP website.
Yeah, the AMTP website,
there's
also
a theater
on the theater. Well, they can find it. If they go to
Northwestern,
there's links to
look
it.
Around.
Well, this has been great, and what a marvelous program. My hat's off to you guys, and Chicago needs it. You've got all the elements in place.
Yeah.
This should be fun. I'm looking forward to
thanks
the show.
Thanks for talking with us.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you for listening to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast, brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. But before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote deals with loneliness and comes from Titus Andronicus, Act 3, Scene 1. I tell my sorrows to the stones. Well, we can't thank you enough for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasures. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.